The small coal mining town of North Fork garnered national attention for its high school's basketball team's rise to fame. Gary Dove remembers how basketball became the glue that brought the people of North Fork together.
Little old ladies who didn't know what a basketball was, wouldn't know a basketball from a football, became, you know, big fans because it brought positive notoriety and attention to the community.
We'll hear that story in just a moment. This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:44. I'm Teresa Wills. Following an investigation started 5 years ago, the U.S. Justice Department determined West Virginia is violating the Americans with Disabilities Act. That's because it has too many children with serious emotional or behavioral disorders in out-of-state residential facilities. As Carol Lofton reports, the Justice Department and the state have agreed to a plan to bring West Virginia into compliance with that law within 5 years.
At a press conference, officials called the agreement landmark and said that it will impact generations to come.
The agreement commits West Virginia to expand services for children with serious emotional or behavioral disorders.
That's Eric Dryband, Assistant Attorney General for the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Department of Justice.
So they can remain in their communities and live with their families or foster families while receiving the mental health services they need, instead of having to live in segregated residential facilities, often far from home, to receive such services.
West Virginia had one of the highest rates of youth in out-of-state residential treatment programs when the Justice Department investigation began. That's partly because there weren't enough local services to serve the kids who needed them. The agreement is intended to bring those kids back into their home communities, while also beefing up local resources to provide care for them. Dryband said the state will do that by increasing in-home and community-based mental health services. The agreement stipulates that children who are currently in residential treatment programs be reintegrated into their family homes and communities, if that's what the family, guardian, or older legal teen desires. This settlement will completely overhaul the way West Virginia approaches child mental and behavioral health. Any young person who enters the state youth services through the child welfare or juvenile justice system will be screened with a yet-to-be-developed standardized mental health screening tool. Children who need counseling or support services are to be immediately referred, but the Justice Department acknowledges that building up that network will take time.
We don't expect West Virginia to do the impossible here. On the other hand, what we have found and several studies have found is that these community-based settings tend to be more efficient and less expensive than these residential treatment centers. So our hope is that the state will be able to bring these children back towards closer to their families and closer to their communities rather than remotely located.
The state has 5 years to reach the goals outlined in the settlement. To pay for the new initiative, the state is in the process of applying for a Medicaid waiver. More funding for wraparound mental health services is also expected to be discussed in the upcoming legislative special session. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Carol Lofton.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Charleston Area Medical Center and Marshall Health. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:47. Partly sunny skies today, highs in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. There's a slight chance of rain in the east with lows in the 40s and 50s. Tomorrow, a chance of morning rain in the east, becoming mostly sunny with highs in the 60s and 70s.
I'm Marilyn DeVita, Director of Development. You've probably heard me talk about the financial challenges facing public broadcasting nationwide. We are not immune. We must ask you to help bridge the funding gap between what we've raised so far and what is needed by July 1. National programming invoices are up over 3% from last year. Go to wvpublic.org today to help protect and sustain West Virginia public broadcasting.
On the most recent episode of Inside Appalachia's podcast, we hear how the small town of North Fork became known as the basketball capital of the United States. This morning, we'll hear part of the story produced by John Hale about his family's place in that history. Roxy Todd starts off asking John to recount the game that started it all for the North Fork Blue Demons.
John, around the early 70s, the Blue Demons won their first state championship title. Tell us about that game.
So the year was 1971, and the North Fork Blue Demons went up against Gully Bridge at the brand new West Virginia University Mountaineer Coliseum. Fun fact, this is one of the first games to be played in that brand new Coliseum. The Blue Demons were down by 13 points at the half. And it wasn't because they weren't playing good ball. It's just that the Gully Bridge team was, you know, just a really, really good team. And, you know, for an example, they had a player on Gully Bridge, I believe, that was about like 6'6", almost 300 pounds. So they were getting knocked around a lot. After halftime, you know, their coach, Jennings Boyd, sat there and told them, he said, look, fellas, you aren't playing bad ball. They're just outplaying you a little bit. So once they came out, they instituted a defensive tactic called the press. And basically what it is, it's where you apply pressure off of an inbound pass up and down the full length of the court. You would basically run the other team down because your quickness and speed, and you always stay on them in an aggressive-like manner. My Uncle David joked, he said, you know, we used to press teams to death back in the day. So when you run up and down and you move the game at a faster pace, that creates chaos on the court and in turn would lead to fouls. And the Blue Demons are able to take advantage of that by getting fouls and making all their foul shots in order to keep them up ahead. And that's eventually what gave them the win in the 1971 championship.
Me and my buddy Steve Hudson and Anthony Wheeler was talking about Temptation. That's when Cloud 9 was on. That's when the song Cloud 9 was out. Just so happened, we went out and bought us some hats and put it on. We became the Temptations. Cloud 9. We was Cloud 9 and everything, man.
Bringing home a state championship was huge for the people of Norfolk. With the odds stacked against them, the Blue Demons were able to turn the tide and beat Gully Bridge for the 1971 championship.
People was waiting on us in Bluefield and stuff. And they followed. We had like a little tight parade all the way down. And then when we got to the high school, when we got back to the school, the whole parking lot, the whole back of the school was nothing but people and crowds.
Fire trucks from North Fork were up there, and they led a procession down 52 through North Fork, through Keystone, and people out on the streets waving, and just a great amount of pride. The pride that everyone had in the team was tenfold after the championship win.
3 years later, North Fork would again win the state AA championship title. This win would be the first of an 8-year streak for North Fork High School. Joe captained the 74 team and led the Blue Demons to a state championship win over Huntington Vincent.
We as the class of 74, we would always say, well, for that 8 straight, it started with us. We got them ready. You know, we got them ready. We trained them well. And because we trained them well, they trained this next team well. They trained the next team, and it went for, you know, 8 straight state championships. And that's unheard of. You know, it's, and, you know, we're just hard to be beat.
That's it. National record tying 7 championships. North Fork, almost 7. Well, they can erase the almost. They have 7 consecutive championships.
Little old ladies who wouldn't know basketball from football became, you know, big fans because it brought positive notoriety and attention to the community.
When they came back from a championship game, there was a cavalcade of people standing out on the streets, you know, welcoming them back. And it was just pride. It was just, you know, it was like you played in the game. That's how proud you were of the accomplishment.
The Blue Demons were a force to be reckoned with, beating teams that went nearly undefeated during the regular season. This small coal mining town was getting national attention. The townspeople wore jackets and hats that had the slogan, North Fork, West Virginia, basketball capital of the United States.
Ladies and gentlemen, a new national record for 8 years in a row, the NCAA champions of West Virginia.
After college, Joe returned to North Fork and became the assistant coach to Boyd in 1979. Then, in 1983, Joe became the new head coach of the North Fork Blue Demons, a task that he did not take lightly.
Honestly, it was kind of scary. You know, I was nervous. I was nervous a lot of days, a lot of nights. I was very, very nervous because of the tradition that Norfolk had. I mean, you know, who wouldn't be?
After a two-year absence from the state tournament, Joe led the Blue Demons to win the 1984 state championships. This win felt like the comeback the town needed, desperately. Because in 84, jobs in Norfolk were really starting to disappear. Eastern Coal, the largest coal mine in the county, had shut down operations. And in the midst of that, the high school winning the state title just felt like there was a ray of hope in sight. And then, everything changed.
I started getting into a groove, and then they closed the school down.
After setting a national record in high school basketball and winning another title in 84, people in Norfolk were feeling pretty good about their high school and community. That's why this news came as a complete shock. Here's Gary Duff.
The way Jim Lane, our principal, found out about it was one of the board members who had voted against it called him that night and told him that, quote, we closed your high school tonight, and end quote. And, you know, he wasn't even aware of the fact that they were even going to consider it, let alone, you know, vote on it.
We didn't see it coming. I can remember coming down the hallway the next morning, and I was talking to one of the teachers, and she said, I spoke to her. I said, good morning, how are you today? And she looked at me and she said, oh, it's not a good morning. And I said, it's not. No. She said, you don't know? And I said, no, I don't know. What's going on? And then she told me that they had voted the night before to close the school.
With everything that Norfolk had accomplished, why now? What was the reason to close a school that not only had an impressive sports record, but was vital to the community?
I believe, personally, that was a political decision. This way, I really believe it was a political decision because Norfolk was getting too much attention for a little small town like this, and with all the goodness that was going on.
People were just devastated, appalled that they would do something like that.
The school's fate came down to the vote of 5 Board of Education members. 3 of the 5 chose to close the school. After a heated back and forth, 2 of the board members urged their counterparts to reconsider. But the 3 board members who wanted the school closure were adamant in their decision. Norfolk High School was to be no more. The students of Norfolk High organized a mass walkout once the news came, and even organized a protest against the board's decision. The community organized a small committee to hopefully change the board's mind.
Down the line, we were going to end up having to litigate. We got a lawyer out of Parkersburg, William Jacobs, who filed an injunction to stop the closing of the school. That went to circuit court down here. The judge ruled that it would be stopped and certain things had to happen. Long story short, we went all the way to the State Board of Education, and they upheld the county ruling, but the legislature, after that, we had talked to the legislative, some of our legislative members, and they made it a law that you have to have public hearings now. You can't just have a meeting and say, we're going to close the school.
We've been listening to a story produced by West Virginia Public Broadcasting's John Hale. Hale shares history about the North Fork Blue Demons and how the school's closure affected the community. Tomorrow on West Virginia Morning, we'll hear the final part of the story and hear what happened to North Fork after the high school was closed. You can see photos from John's reporting on our website, wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.